What's happening, my sexy fajitas? Tell several friends it is time once again to sashay ferociously to your second favorite piece of sectional furniture and kick your stockings firmly to the sock floor. The doctor says you gotta take it easy since forever ago you contracted that bad case of soda foot. That's why the end of your sensuous fibula is sensationally fizzy. Slowly fire up that iPod and listen to this 200th episode of the SF Signal podcast while eating a bowl of Senegalese Fruit Loops. Put your buds in your holes and then put your earbuds in your ear holes. For you sex fiends out there, this is better than that salacious friction. SF Signal, so fine. I'm suddenly feeble.
This is the Hugo Losing SF Signal podcast, as powered by me. I'm your host. I am the Hugo award-winning fanzine editor / Hugo nominated podcast producer of the Campbell award-winning Merlafferty's I Should Be Writing. My name's Patrick. Nothing? No laughter?
Okay, you can edit that so it's closer to the joke.
That was pretty clever. I mean, come on. Come on now. All right, so this is our Worldcon wrap-up. This is SF Signal Podcast. I've got folks on here. Let's say hello to everybody. Let's start with John.
Hey, folks. How you doing? John DiNardo here, editor of SFSignal.com.
I did that because I never start with you, John.
I know. You threw me off a little bit.
I did, yes. Next up is Gail.
Hi, Gail Carriger here, author.
You've written some stuff.
I've written a few things, yep.
That pumpkin on Facebook is the coolest freaking pumpkin ever.
Isn't it amazing? I don't know how they do it, but it was pretty remarkable.
If you guys have not seen that, go to Gail's feed on Facebook and take a look at that. It's really, really cool. It's one of those specially carved pumpkins. It's all steampunky, and it's one of her characters, and it's very, very cool.
Ooh.
Next up, we'll say hello to Ooh. That's Karen. You were just
going Hi. My name's Karen Burnham, and I continue to maintain that I'm actually a book reviewer, no matter all the other stuff that people have me doing.
That's what you want to be. That's what you want to be in your heart.
Is that what you tell them at NASA?
Yes, at NASA. She goes in, they're like, we need you to blow some stuff up today. I can't. I'm reading a book.
I'm a book reviewer, not a rocket scientist.
And
Oh, wait. I'm both.
But if you're going to say that, you have to say, damn it. Damn it, Jim. And that other voice that you heard was the voice of the Hairy Mango, Mr. Matt.
Matthew Sanborn Smith, beware the Hairy Mango.
Yes, and if you hadn't already picked up on the theme, these are all folks who went to Worldcon in San Antonio this year.
Yay!
I don't think any of you got as sick as I did.
I was sick upon arrival, so it is possible that everybody there got sick from me.
It was your fault. It was your fault.
It's my fault. No, I don't. Actually, I don't see how it can be my fault. That's one of the reasons I wear gloves, is because it's hard for me to infect people or anyone to infect me that way.
Yes.
I thought that was part of like the cosplay, right? The steampunky cosplay thing. No?
It's part of my image, but it has turned into a great safety precaution, I must say.
Especially, I mean, those go all the way up to like your shoulders.
Some of them do, yes.
So
gloves
you're completely
are good.
Covered. Yep, you're completely
covered. I also have freezing cold hands. I mean, Texas was hot, but if you met me in the street outside where it was 100 degrees, my hands would still be cold. So.
Yeah,
although,
you know.
I'll say, Patrick, I didn't get as sick as you did, but man, Monday night I was run down. I was seriously like, oh yeah, I should get in touch with Patrick, see if he wants to have dinner.
I only just recovered. Like, I'm completely serious. I only just am like, oh, yeah. Oh, I'm back in the world.
Yeah, me too. Just today, I finally got my work and my personal email back under control.
Yeah, exactly.
So let me ask you this. Did anybody eat? Okay, you know the River Center Hotel? You go down to the Riverwalk, and there was that Mexican restaurant there on the left. Did anybody eat there?
Yes.
Nope.
Nope.
Okay. No. Okay, Karen, so here's an interesting thing. On Monday, I went there for a late lunch, and after I ate, I went into the men's room, and there was a waiter standing there using the facilities, and so I had to go into the stall, and as I'm in the stall, I hear him flush and then leave.
Ooh.
And then I got sick. That was pretty bad. So this is our Worldcon wrap-up post. So this is like we got to talk about. And this is also going to be the 200th episode. So that's a huge
Whoa.
Accomplishment there.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so that's going to be pretty awesome. Now, whose dog is barking?
That's mine. My dog. My dog's barking.
Now, is that your dog or is that another foster dog?
It's a it's the one that's barking is likely ours.
Okay.
We got two dogs plus one foster.
Yeah, I don't know if people know this, but John does foster animals, which is really cool. I think isn't your limit 27?
It's about that. It seems like that. It seems like it's growing every week.
So we had a lot of accomplishments at WorldCon this year. Number one, SF Signal had the second annual meetup, and I want to say it was the largest. Wasn't it the largest gathering of contributors ever, John?
It was in one convention, sure.
How many people were there?
Oh, how many? You're gonna make me rattle them off.
I didn't count.
So, but it's okay. So it was Patrick, Karen. I'm going by my list. Matthew, that's on my screen right now. Patrick, Matthew, Karen is three. Josh Vogt was there.
Larry,
Derek,
Jamie Todd Rubin, Derek, Jeff Patterson. Who am I missing? Oh, me.
You were there.
I was there.
We also had
Stina was there. She's been on a few times.
Yep.
That's 10.
About 10 people. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were there. Cool. You've been on a few times.
Yep. And then at the meetup itself, we had a bunch of authors show up and editors and different people. And we had the Lorene Hudson from Hunt Press was the editor that I'm thinking of. D.O. Young was there, which we found out that he has a strange connection to John that we never knew about before. David Booth was there. Emma Newman came again. Rhonda Udale. Yeah. Rhonda was there.
Rhonda was there at the meetup. Yeah, we had Max Gladstone was there. Wesley Chu was there. Mm-hmm.
Jeremy Tolbert.
Yep.
Jeremy Tolbert was there. M. Todd Galloglass was there. A bunch of people.
Weissman was there. Candace Black was there. What was the author that I kept asking you? Who was that? John.
Beth Dawkins.
Beth Dawkins. Yes. Right. So I mean, there was a ton of people there. I tried to take pictures, and every time I took a picture, for some reason, it turned out to be Matthew Sanborn Smith.
He was just photobombing everybody.
Matt, you had a good time.
I had a great time. It was fantastic meeting everybody. Should I go into my whole spiel or what?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Well, let me see. It was the best part, of course, was meeting all of you.
Aww.
Although I had met Karen before, but that was still good.
Sorry, it wasn't special. The second time.
Jason Huff. I forgot Jason Huff. He was there.
Yes, he was. Uh-huh.
We had to clean up a lot of maple syrup after breakfast on Sunday. I had a great time with Jeff Patterson in the dealer's room. We went around the fan section, and he walked me through all these old WorldCon programs, and he told me about his memories of cons over the past 30 years. That was pretty good. It was awesome being a 12-year-old again with you guys and JP.
A question that I had, and I don't know. Maybe we could get the female perspective here as well. But what is it about WorldCon that turns grown men into 12-year-old boys?
It kind of turned me into a 12-year-old girl, too, so I don't think you guys have the corner on that market.
Okay, Karen?
I think it's meant to do that. I mean, and seriously, even Gavin, I think it took him from being 2 to being 12. Because he saw the Iron Throne that was in the exhibit hall, and he climbed up into it. By himself, like I had nothing to do with it. He climbed up into it, and people would randomly started coming up and taking pictures of him because it was so freaking cute.
He's ready to take his crown.
Exactly.
I admit that at one point, Karen was distracted by Gary K. Wolf or somebody was talking, and Gavin was in his stroller, and I walked up behind him, and I grabbed it, and I just did. I popped a wheelie. I don't think he liked that at all. He was not into popping the wheelie. He looked at me like, who the hell are you, and why are you touching my stroller?
I remember the look he gave you. That was hilarious.
Anyway, man.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would like that.
Yeah, we completely interrupted you.
That's okay. I'm used to that from you, Patrick. One of the high points was meeting my sister from another, Mr. Christy Yant, in person for the first time. I've known her for years.
Christy's awesome.
And it was great kind of striking up the beginning of a friendship with her husband. And it was great to have a conversation with him that didn't make him say, thank you for submitting, but this story just doesn't cross. Kate Baker was awesome. I met her in person for the first time. We've been pals since her Starship Sofa days. Mm-hmm. It was cool that she mentioned the sofa and Tony in her acceptance speech.
Yep.
I kept bumping into Beth Dawkins like six times. It was kind of weird, but now we're buddies. I met Scott Edelman. He's like the world's nicest guy. And he was very welcoming, as I guess he was to many other people. And I got to thank Michael Swanwick for writing The Periodic Table of Science Fiction, because that was, it was influential to Beware the Hairy Mango, because I realized that you were allowed to write ridiculous and short fiction, because as he told me, you can do anything. And so he was right. Let's see. I went to a panel. It stopped me whenever you want. I don't know how much time you're going to give me here.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Was this your first Worldcon?
This was my first Worldcon.
Okay. So you were totally having the whole con experience.
I was. I got dunked in the toilet for being the rookie. Some people stuffed me in a locker. Yeah, it was very cool. Like the first day I wandered around and I made small talk with a couple people, but I was just kind of lost, you know, but, then finally, I started meeting people that I knew that night, like you, for instance. So then it got cool. But I went to this because you're so cool, Patrick.
I
went to a panel called "How to Sell to Ellen Datlow," and Gardner Dozois was there, Michael Swanwick, Eileen Gunn, and Carolyn Spector, and it was mostly just them goofing around. But I got some really interesting insight into William Gibson's very early career, because most of the panel knew him back in the day when he was just starting out. And they talked about some unpublished works that he had written. And had that stuff been published, his work might have gone in a completely different direction, which would have been fascinating.
Wow.
There were lots of Robert E. Howard panels, I assume because he was a Texan. And that was cool because I like Howard. And I went to a couple of cool panels there. Karen presided over one of those. And I went to the Alamo with Liz Gorinsky and Mickey and Keffy. And the only thing I've ever heard about the Alamo is how disappointing it is. So my expectations were so low that it turned out to be pretty nice.
Cool.
DiNardo introduced me to Nick Mamadas in my last 5 minutes at Worldcon. And we hit it off, and so I was kind of unhappy that we hadn't met 2 days earlier. But, you know, say lovey.
Yeah, that tends to happen.
One thing I want to mention on a somewhat serious note, we have a friend, I won't mention her name because I don't know if she wants to be mentioned, but we have a friend who requires a wheelchair to get around.
Oh, this was horrible.
She was asked to be part of a panel on disability in science fiction, and when she got there, there was no ramp for her to get to the stage.
Yeah, and
let me just say, I was on the programming team, and I was on a very small subset of the programming team, so I had nothing to do with that. But holy crap, I apologize, and and I'm also on the programming team for London, and we are currently taking steps to make sure that will not happen again.
Good.
And Matt, just to throw it out there, the other mm-hmm. panelists have actually gone on Twitter and said they're now kicking themselves for not thinking of this at the time. But they wished that they had grabbed their chairs and gotten off the stage and sat down with her.
Yeah, that would have been good, too. I only bring it up. I mean, it's, you know, blaming isn't going to do anybody any good. But I'm bringing it up so that we can maybe avoid the problem at future cons.
Exactly.
Because she told me this is like the third con she's had accessibility problems at. So that's a bummer. So anyway, that's about it. It was cool. I met Toby Bacall, Chuck Wendig, Merle Lafferty, Brooke Bolander, John Klima, and lots of other people. So it was awesome. It was just great to meet people. I enjoyed that more than, you know, just hitting panels all day.
It is a great experience and a great opportunity to meet people. For example, I met Gail Carriger twice, or no, three times.
At this WorldCon or just in general?
At this WorldCon, yeah. There was the Sifwa table and I believe twice in the bar.
Yes, well, that's usually where I am at a convention.
Did you have a good time? You were one of the folks who had like ridiculous amount of scheduling.
I did. I had a lot of programming. I felt really spoiled, actually, because after I talked to other people, they were like, they kept saying how they didn't get very much programming, and I was like, I got so much. I actually declined a programming item, which I normally wouldn't do, and I'd actually asked to be on. Not a lot of programming when I submitted, but I got my thing in really early. I think that might have helped. But yeah, so I was really, really busy, which basically meant once the evening rolled around, I didn't really want to do anything at all except sit on a chair in the bar. But fortunately, I'm at the point where if I go and sit on a chair in a bar, I'm going to know somebody in the bar. So that was pretty cool. For me, this was number six. So, and I think I'm at the point, having done a lot of conventions and now knowing a lot of people in the industry, that they're really comfortable for me. And I feel like anytime I go into a room or a panel or the bar, I'm going to know somebody who's there. And it's kind of really nice. It feels like summer camp or something. There's always going to be someone cool who I want to see again, who I could talk to. So I'm happy about that.
I was trying to articulate it in a campish kind of way, and I was thinking it was like the high school reunion that you actually want to go to, because all the kids you want to hang out with are going to be there.
Yeah, and I mean the downside is that I am kind of a social butterfly, so I feel like I never got to spend that much time with anybody unless I end up trapped next to them at the bar for a while. So, like, I didn't get to talk to you for very long, and I saw Karen, like, in passing a couple of times. Yeah. I didn't really get to talk to her. In fact, we had one of those sort of funny, awkward things where I was at lunch with my editor, and she was sitting right there, and I'm like, I'm lunching with my editor, Karen's right there, I'd kind of like to be talking to her, too, but I can't, so... And Karen very like observed the etiquette and did not like come over or anything. It was very nice.
Yeah, it looked like you had something going on. So I was like, well, I just need to eat and go anyway. Although I do apologize for that one time, because they were like, that one guy. And I was like, oh, Terry Bisson. And they were like, oh, yeah, thanks. I was like, oh, I'm eavesdropping. Bad Karen.
Was that, I'm just curious, is that Davey?
Yeah, it was Davey.
Yeah.
Yeah, my young adult editor doesn't go to WorldCon, so. But Davey was there. Like Davey was just holding. That's the reason that, you know, frankly, this is a big giveaway, but almost all the Orbit authors are always going to end up in the bar, because Davey is not one of those editors who does panels or really hangs out at the convention. She just hangs out at the bar, and so
and
we
drinks.
All end up at the bar. Yeah.
Yeah, and buys drinks. I mean, she
and buys drinks for people. Yeah.
When Murr won the Campbell, she was buying champagne.
The champagne was flowing freely. She yes. had the champagne on ice before the winner was announced, frankly. Like, Davey was like, just in case we're either drinking out of disappointment or we're drinking out of victory. And we were, oh, you should have heard the bar, because it was mostly Orbit at that point. And so when Murr won and somebody reported in to us, the whole bar started screaming and yelling and cheering. And it was really cute, actually. That was one of my favorite things, is that, and fortunately for us, Murr came to us after she had been photographed and then was celebrating with us. So we basically had a big celebratory party, and it was awesome, because Murr is so cool, and it was so fun for her to win, and we were all excited about it.
She is, yes. She's awesome. And she was they called themselves the Tierra Club this year, and they all went out and got tierras.
Oh, so
and
cute.
They were sitting behind us. I don't know if you knew this, John. They were sitting behind us at the Hugos.
Oh yeah, so every time every time Paul Cornell was doing his not a Hugo jokes, you know, it was getting a nice round of laughter from behind us.
Yes, they were. And so, yeah, as soon as Murr's name was called, I was like, yes! And I'm like punching the air, and I turned around and high-fived her as she was on her way, and then, you know, Chris Garcia tackled her.
Of course. That was like Chris is a local boy for us, so he's at all of my local conventions. And I wandered into the green room like the first thing I was there, just going to check in right after I'd gotten my registration and everything. And the first person I saw was Chris Garcia. I was sitting in the green room and gave me a big hug and immediately started interviewing me for something, because that's what he does. He shoves a shoves a cell phone in your nose and is like, tell me, blah, 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 blah. But that was, that kind of boded well, I think, for the whole convention. And that's how it was for me. Like, I don't really have any books out right now. I don't really have anything on the line. I wasn't up for any awards or anything. So I felt kind of relaxed and easygoing about the whole event. And I think that contributed to my enjoyment of it, because I really had a great time. My partner says that every time I come back from a Worldcon, I say, oh, that was the best one yet. I do think this was the best one yet. So.
Well, I you were talking about not being able to connect with people. I figured out the easiest way to do that was to sit between the bar and the bathroom.
Yeah, that's where I ran into you.
That's where I was sitting, and people just kept walking by. They're like, hey, I'm on the way to the bathroom, but let me come over there and talk to you for a minute.
Yeah, you caught me at one of my drunkest moments of the whole convention. I believe I might have been reeling at one point.
Well, it was a lot of fun. Now, John, do you have any like standout moments you want to talk about?
Oh, again, it was that Hugo thing. Actually, that's just like last year. It's a little bit of a blur. I wasn't at Worldcon all that long. I mean, all told, we were there for like maybe 50 hours.
Yeah, you including left, sleep. And I didn't even realize I was on a panel, and you were already gone.
On Monday, yeah, and we got in very, very late Friday night. We drove in, so it was just Saturday and Sunday we were there, and honestly, it was just like one cool moment after another. You know, the only regret being that I didn't have more time to spend with people, and there were some people like Gail I didn't even run into at all.
Yeah,
you mentioned Michael Swanwick. I didn't even know he was there. I would have loved to have said hello. And it's just and honestly, it was like when I was going to register Saturday morning, just walking over to the registration hotel or convention center, that took like an hour, because stopping to say hi to people I haven't seen, or introducing myself to people who I knew online and that kind of thing. And it was all one very big social weekend, and it was awesome, and I had a lot of fun, and it was over too quickly, and it was fantastic.
It was.
Yeah, I was sorry I didn't get a chance to catch you Monday morning, because I walked through the Hugo, group after the ceremony, and I was like, oh, there's John and Patrick. I'll congratulate them tomorrow morning, because, you had a big crowd of people around you. And then in the morning, like, somebody was like, oh, and Donato's already gone. I was like, aw.
Yeah.
So
I did at least get to congratulate Patrick.
Which is awesome, and I appreciate that. John and I talked briefly about what we were going to do in JP. We talked about what we were going to do on stage if we won, and we didn't really talk about what we were going to say necessarily. But I knew that John had said before, it's so difficult to name everybody, and thank everybody. And I ended up name checking two people, and I know one of them was thrilled. I think the other one was thrilled as well. I'll ask her here in a second. But The first one was John Stevens, because I said, when you're editing posts at SF Signal, they go from the length of 50 words all the way up to the 2,200 John Stevens epics, opus, that you have to sit there with a dictionary to know what the heck he's talking about, because you have to look up every other word. And that got a little bit of a chuckle. And then I did mention that I said, these guys wore ties. I didn't wear one because Gail Carriger said I didn't have to.
I know. And Mer mentioned me in her speech, too. I was like, one of the few times I'm not at the Hugo Awards and people actually talk about me. But yes, it's true. I mean, I subscribe to good dress, but I've never subscribed to the idea that a man should have to wear a noose around his neck.
And I was already, when we sat down, it was fine. But as all the people crowded in, it started getting hot to me. And I'm sitting there, I'm already uncomfortable, I'm nervous, and so I'm wearing a suit, and I'm getting hot. And I don't think, John, did you get hot?
I didn't think it was as bad as last year, honestly, but it was warm, sure. You know, when you get nervous and as tension builds, as it gets closer to, you know, it took an hour before they actually start the awards, right? Because of the, you know, all the things they do beforehand. And so, you know, it's, and that part's fine. And then when they start the awards, you know, the, you know, it starts somehow starts getting hotter as if that affects the temperature of the room. No, it just, you just get more nerve wracked. And, yeah, it was a little bit warm, sure.
And we go up on stage.
I got a good story about this.
John and JP are both like, you know, John's like, I'm going to go last because we knew what he was going to say. And I looked at JP and I said, so do you want to go? No. So I had to go first. So, of course, you know, I'm going to be a smartass when I get up there. And I say things like, I wanted to thank John DiNardo for never filing the restraining order.
Yes. Too expensive, it turned out. Like that was my comment.
And stuff like, you know, I'm just being a dork. And I apparently got a couple laughs, but I find out later John's like, he can't hear anything I'm saying. He's just kind of nodding.
I can barely hear, you know, yeah. I heard my name, and I think I said some funny things in the right places, but I'm not sure.
and then we get our awards, and we go off, and we're going down the ramp and the back and the little steps and stuff, and we're back there, and John's looking at me, and he's like, do you need some water? Do you want some water? Are you okay? Do you want some water? Because they have water here. We could get you some water. They got the water right there. Do you want some water? Why don't you get him some water? Do you need some water? And I'm thinking, I'm thinking, I must look like shit.
Let me explain. I was projecting. That was all 100% projecting. Last year in Chicago, when I walked off the stage, my knees were barely able to hold me up because I was just so nervous, and it was just a very overwhelming experience. And I you know, at the bottom of the ramp there, I needed to just, okay, let me, someone, you know, some, there's some folks back there, handlers or whatever they call them, you know, assisting the people coming off the stage, making sure they don't trip down steps and things of that nature. Because, you know, it's a little dark and you're not thinking of that. You're thinking, oh my God, I got a Hugo, right? You're thinking, and your mind is just buzzing. So, you know, so they offered me some water. I'm like, you know what? I need to just stop for a bit and just take a drink of water. And I remembered that, and I thought maybe, you know, you guys were feeling the same, and maybe I was a little too, maybe.
So I turned to the lady and I said, apparently I need some water. She's like, okay. And she gets, and but neither John or JP got any water, so I'm just sitting there drinking the water. And he's like, are you ready to go? Do we need, should you go? And I'm like, sure.
yeah. Well, so then, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and then you make that walk back to the, you know, in the dark, back to the seats, holding these gigantic, heavy Hugo awards, and people are like, oh, you know, and they kind of, like, they're reaching out to, I don't know, grab your rocket.
Yeah, Steven Silver wanted to hold one. And then, of course, a little later, he went up to get Joss Whedon's, he accepted for Joss Whedon. And then, you know, when the ceremony was over, he goes, oh, can I hold your Hugo again for a minute? And, you know, he's doing arm curls, you know, with my Hugo in one hand and Joss Whedon's in the other, right? Just because they're I think they weigh like 12 pounds a piece.
They were really heavy.
They are, yeah. And I did let folks, you know, because they were like, do you mind? Can I? And I'm like, sure, you know, and I'm letting them hold the Hugo. And they're like, wow, that's really heavy.
I
was going to say, we were sitting all in a row, and to my left, I had Emma Newman and Lee Harris and Adam Christopher and I believe Adam's wife were sitting all there with us. And so they all got to check it out, too.
Yeah, the Vincent Villafranca was the artist who did the bass this year, the bass design. And it's so detailed and awesome. You know, it's got the... you know, it's got the planet as the base, but then the globe as the base, and then around that they got these detailed figures of you know, aliens and creatures and, you know, reading books, right? It's very book focused, right? So he has all these figures, these very detailed figures reading books around that globe. It's very nice.
So I'm sorry, this is just funny. You remember when we first went in, John, and we're getting seats?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you or JP, somebody counted out like how many we needed, but it didn't include the angry robot people who were, you know, Lee and them who were coming with Emma. Uh-huh. And so we're like, well, we need one more seat. And this lady sat down.
And she wasn't moving.
And she wasn't moving. And we're just like, we need one more seat. And I looked at Matt and I go, move down to the end. Go, sit down there. And he did like the Charlie Brown, you know, head down. But that lady wouldn't move. So did you had to sit on the other side of her.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she was okay, but, you know, I wanted to hold hands with JP through the ceremony.
So I have a story from when I went up. You know, we run through the Chris Garcia hug thing, right? The hug.
You
hug
have gate. Not arrived until you've been hugged by Chris Garcia.
So he was hugging everyone. He's like a serial hugger, as I call him, calling him Sir Serial Hugger, right? And he's just everyone. So you give him the bear hug, and then you go up, and you and JP were you know walking up to the stage. I think JP was already walking up the steps by this time, and Ellen Datlow, who's sitting on the corner. In the front row, she gets up and she gives me a hug and she's like, oh, congratulations. And I'm like, oh, thank you. And you know, I at one point I had to, you know, break off the hug because I'm like, you guys are ahead of me on the stage. So I break off the hug and I say to her, I got to go. I got a thing. And I'm motioning to the stage. And then I walking up to the stage and Pat Cadigan, she goes, oh, look at you, Mr. Big Shot, right? That got on the recording. I think you could hear a little bit of the local laughter when she said that. It was hysterical. I thought that was funny. I got a reaction out of me as I was walking up the stairs. It finally hit me what she said.
Two things. I love the open letter from Chris and your reply that's on SF Signal right now.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, that was fun.
If you haven't read that, go check it out.
So what happened was I was on the lobby in the main hotel was situated. I was on the third floor. I was actually, this was at the time when the elevators were packed and there were no stairs you couldn't get from the lobby up to the, you couldn't take stairs up to the first five floors. It was all blocked off for security reasons or something. Anyway, so I'm like wandering around the third floor looking for a flight of stairs because I didn't know this at the time. And I see hanging out, you know, between on the second floor between the up and down escalators, Chris Garcia, and he's hanging out there with some folks. And so I shout at him from the third floor. I go, Garcia. And I point at him, I go, wait there. And I come down and we actually had a conversation, like a 20, 30 minute conversation at the bottom of the escalator at Worldcon, which is why he calls that post Conversations at the Bottom of the Escalator.
People get bumping into you.
Of course people were walking by. Anyway, that's the kind of the origin. That's where that column came from, was that discussion.
It's great. It's awesome. And you know, I know that there's lots of things swirling about Worldcon, and you have people who are saying bad things and see people who are saying good things, and there's this and there's that, and there's all this contentious kind of crap going around right now. But I thought that was a really nice, just a nice way to approach the whole thing. You know, and the whole Grang fandom and inclusion and all that good stuff. I mean, it was just a great post, and I really liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I thought that was good, too. There's a, because I said to him, I said, you know, there's two ways first you acknowledge there's a problem between you know, what we call, you know, Grang fandom, old school and new school fandom, or whatever you want to call them, right? So there seems to be words flying about between certain folks or you know, there seems to be contention there. So I said to him, I go, Chris, what can we do to bridge this gap? I mean, if anyone can do it, right? I'm thinking it's me and him, right? You know, Mr. Old School and Mr. New School. And then he told me something I didn't realize. He doesn't really consider himself old school fandom. And, you know, as far as being plugged into fans, I mean, he's way more plugged in than I am, right? I mean, he's more connected with those folks, and he's attended more cons, and he's been in it longer, and he knows all the players, and he's spoken with them, and you know, he moves in those circles, and I don't, right? I move in different circles. So that's when we started talking about fandom and things that can be done and all that stuff. And that's kind of the genesis of that post.
Matt and I were talking about it at Worldcon. We move in squares.
We are squares, so it's easy.
It makes sense.
So, Karen, I know that you were working on the academic stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So this was my seventh Worldcon. I was just counting them up. I just beat Gail by one, apparently.
Curses!
And I have never worked so hard. Basically, yeah, I was organizing the academic track, and then there were also a couple other things I was helping with, and then they scheduled me for seven programming items. And so
I remember seeing you one day when you were all dressed up, and you basically said, "Well, I'm doing academic stuff today, and I wanted to be able to, you know, bring the hammer down if I had to, if something didn't go right."
Yeah, basically, I did. Yeah, I wasn't wearing a suit, but I was definitely dressed professionally because, you know, for one, some of the academics were dressed up and some weren't, and I wanted to match whatever I needed to. And for two, if I had to, you know, if something like I had no idea when I got there super early because I knew that the some of the people presenting papers were going to need projectors. And I had made sure the programming folks knew that I needed them, but that doesn't guarantee that communication has come all the way down the line to the people who actually put the projectors in the rooms.
Right, right.
So I woke up in the morning just thinking, oh God, what if I have to go, like, you know, scream at somebody to get a projector today? And one of the easiest ways to do that is to look professional, and then you don't have to scream quite so loud.
Now,
oh my God, to their credit, I mean, it all worked out great. We had planned to have the entire academic track in one room, and that's what we did, basically back to back to back to back to back with a lunch break.
What room?
It was 6B.
Okay.
I spent a lot of time in that room.
I did too. I had a panel in there.
Okay, yeah. Actually, I think I might have had another panel in there later or something. Yeah. But you know, everything I needed was right there. It all worked smoothly. The mics were great. We only had one person drop out at the very, 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 very last minute. And the papers were interesting. I mean, I was really happy because I just get the abstracts, and I was choosing, you know, the participants based on abstracts. So, you know, you don't really know what you're going to get and how good a public speaker people are going to be, but, I was really impressed. I think my favorite was Marianne Maharaj. She talked about feminist interpretations of Guinevere and King Arthur, and then Sita in the Ramayana. It was fascinating. And I'm not really big into Robert E. Howard, but the last panel that we had were two Robert E. Howard scholars, and especially the last guy who went, Jeffrey. Oh dear Lord, I'm blanking on his name.
I've got it somewhere actually.
It's the one Matt was in. It was fascinating. He was talking about the way Robert E. Howard's fiction reflected some of the extremely disturbingly racist anthropology, the scientific anthropology of the time.
Hmm. Jeffrey Shanks.
Thank you, Shanks. I knew it was an S-S-H combo. Mark Finn had helped arrange a lot of the Robert E. Howard programming. So there was that, and then the panels I was on went well. They had me moderate like four of them, which is just crazy.
I love moderating.
I do enjoy I kind of enjoy moderating because the pressure's off in a weird way. Like, I don't have to know what I'm talking about. I just have to enable other people to talk about things.
You've just figured out my secret of podcasting. You hate it, Gail?
I hate it. It brings out the worst teacher in me, and I just get so mean, and I shut people down, and I'm like, okay, that's enough, moving on. And yeah,
I cannot imagine you being mean.
Uh-huh.
I'm
thank
serious
you for the sarcasm.
No, that's not sarcasm. I'm being serious. I can't imagine that.
You don't want to be around Gail when she takes off those shoulder length gloves.
Yeah.
Gloves.
You don't
I'll tell
make
my old
angry.
Students you said that.
You don't want
but
to
honestly,
angry.
You know, the favorite thing that happened to me, I mean, usually, like I say, when I go to WorldCon, I've really got my literary hat on. I'm not thinking of myself as a NASA person. But they had me on two panels that were part of the science track. And the last one was called Mars or Bust. And it had both the science track things that I went to had great audiences, saw some younger people. And on Mars or Bust, there was a young woman who was trying to ask some questions, and she was kind of shy, and she kind of didn't quite know what to ask. So I don't want to say she got steamrolled. Like, they gave her a chance and kind of answered the stuff and then moved on. But after the programming, I just like made a bee, you know, after the panel was over, I made a beeline right for her and got a chance to talk to her for a little bit. She's in high school, and she, you know, was wondering what NASA was in terms of, like, how does it work and what specialties are they looking for? And she's more interested in ecological systems. And I'm like, yes, we need people like that. Anyway, it felt really, I was really happy to see that engagement on the honest to God science side and not just the science fiction side. I was really happy about that.
slightly close to that topic. I was on a panel. I was on two panels, and I didn't know why I was on them. One was on authors and their flame wars. The other one was about urban fantasies. And, you know, it's all these published authors talking about their, and then me, you know, talking about their urban fantasies, and then I'm sitting there. And I even said to the folks when the panel started, you know, everybody was introducing themselves, and they got to me, who, you know, I'm doing the thing like when you go into the classroom, and, you know, I'm sure Gail knows this with her students, there's always the guy who sits all the way far in the back, hoping that you won't pay any attention to him. So I sat on the end of the table because I'm thinking, why the hell, you know, I'm feeling like a fraud. So they get to me, and I just looked up and said, well, I write urban fantasies, and all of their publishers have rejected me, which got a big laugh. But when it turned to, they started talking about like urban fantasy book covers and why is it always, you know, the half-naked woman with the dagger and the tattoo and this and that, and it kind of turned to marketing. I mentioned that I do marketing. I swear you could see all the heads of all the people in the room turn to me. And it was almost like the village moment, you know, when all the little kids turn and look at you. And then suddenly, you know, people are putting their hands up and saying, well, I have a question for Patrick about marketing. Well, I want to talk to Patrick about marketing. I have this. And afterwards, moderator's like, did you regret saying that you were in marketing? And I said, no, because it gave me something to actually talk about, you know, and contribute on the dang panel. So I felt kind of good about that. Now, Gail, what kind of panels did you do yourself? I mean, what were you on?
Well, I was on, like, the usual suspects, which, you know, I'm kind of accustomed to, like, right now. Like, there's usually a steampunk one, and there's an urban fantasy one. And they were actually, usually I dread those because you get the same questions over and over again, or the world building or whatever. But actually, this time around, they were all pretty good. I had moderators who pretty much knew what they were talking about and steered the conversation into territory that was interesting for the panelists. Whether or not that was helpful for the people attending, I'm not sure. But I was really impressed with a couple of things at this Worldcon, one of which was general attendance level. It felt it felt up to me, but it also felt like people were more interested in going to panels than they had been in previous years. Or maybe I was just on popular panels. But even my early morning panels and even panels that I thought wouldn't be well attended were pretty well attended. So one of the best ones was I was on kind of like a successful book launch thing. And I didn't get to say some of the things I wanted to say, but, you know, there it is. But that one was one of the best attended. And that was also one of the ones that, like, we were in the wrong room and we had to be moved. And it was kind of crazy. And it was 8:00 at night on Friday, but it was still very well attended. So I was pretty happy with the panel. I was on a couple of panels. I was on an environmental one that I was like, why am I here? I think it was an archaeology thing. But
gotcha. I did learn that on the questionnaire, when they ask you what times do you want to not be available to be on panels, when you are a Hugo Award nominee, the answer to that question is anything on Monday morning.
Yeah.
And I made the mistake of not saying that, and therefore I was scheduled to moderate a panel on podcasting at 10 a.m. on Monday. So I had to do that, and there was very few people in there. There was just a handful of folks. Skiffy and Fanti showed up, so I did heckle them. And it wasn't, you know, I think Kat Valenti was supposed to be on it, and she didn't show. So I don't know if maybe she changed something or what. But yeah, that was kind of a rough one.
I don't do 10:00 panels. Like, I just, that's one of the hard and fast in all, at all of my conventions. I'm just like, yes. I'm sorry, guys. I don't mind doing an 8:00 at night panel, but I'm not going to do a 10:00 in the morning one.
Now that I'm doing conventions with a 2-year-old, I'm like, yeah, sure. Morning, no problem. It's not like I can sleep in anyway.
So Karen, what I wanted to ask you, well, before I ask you that, Karen, I did want to say, now John brought his copious amounts of knowledge about ebook publishing to a panel.
Oh, stop. So you know that story. You know what happened there. Now you're going to make me tell it. Wonderful. Okay, here's the deal.
Wait, was that the one that Kirsten Gonglong was on?
No, I wasn't on any panels. Here's why. They send out the questionnaire, and I'm checking all these boxes of things I like, and there's this checkbox for ebooks, and I'm like, yeah, I like to read ebooks, so I'll put a checkbox there. So I get here are the panels you are on, and I get three panels on ebook publishing and how to produce ebooks, And I'm like, oh, I misunderstood the questionnaire. So I sent off an email. I sent off an email, say, hey, I really can't be on these panels. I know nothing about ebook production, so please take me off these panels. And then a week and a half later, or some amount of time later, I get, oh, okay, you know, sorry about the mix-up. Here's a replacement panel for you to be on, and it's ebook publishing. And so by then, so I send another email, say, just go ahead and remove me from the program. You can use me as backup for some of the other things. Let me know, but otherwise, I can't be on this one either. I really have no knowledge at all on this, and so, you know, it wouldn't be fair and all that stuff. So but then I get to Worldcon to see that I am listed on one of, I guess, that one panel that they put me on last minute. And so and I realize now, or I realized, you know, a couple of days after the con, like, oh darn it, I didn't think to tell anyone who was on that panel that there was a mistake and I wouldn't be there. So you're talking about Cat Valente didn't show up. I was probably, somebody somewhere probably said, oh, DiNardo didn't even show up. What's up with that guy?
Yeah, they were sitting there going, wow, this guy, he wins a Hugo. He's a prima donna. He didn't even show up for the panel.
Yeah.
So, Karen, the question I was going to ask you is, did they, I know that you were just doing the academic stuff, but on the paneling or on the programming, did they do something different this year? Were they trying a different way of scheduling people or something?
I wasn't, again, I totally wasn't really involved in that, but if your other WorldCon experience was Chicago, it was very different from that.
Well, I think what I had heard, and I could be just dreaming this, as Gail mentioned, there were a lot of authors and different folks who didn't get any programming at all. Who had been on programming in previous cons, not just ShyCon, but, you know, previous conventions before. And that's kind of why the Drinks with Writers party happened.
Right.
Was because there was all these writers. And I had heard that they had done something different with the, like, choosing who gets to be on what. And that it just didn't work. That's what I had heard.
I've got nothing on that.
Okay.
That was all happening in a different mailing list that I wasn't part of, and I would like to say that I say the programming team. I mean, it was my first experience working on a programming team with Worldcon, and I'm glad I had it. And the academic track got really weird and difficult at the last minute, and somehow they helped us pull it all together, and it pulled off fine. So from my point of view, I've got no complaints, but I'm definitely, given that I'm the co-head literary track programming at the next Worldcon, I'm listening to everything everyone's saying and getting increasingly nervous. I hope we won't replicate the mistakes, whatever mistakes previous cons have made, but I'm sure we'll either replicate some of them or come up with whole new ones. And but we're really going to try to inclusive and spread things a little more evenly and all that stuff.
Go ahead, Gail.
I've done programming. So back in my early days before I was an author, I programmed a couple of conventions, and I think a lot of people who want to be on programming don't realize how incredibly difficult it is. Like, it's not just balancing what people want to be on, but it's like trying to balance your slots for panels versus, you know, like single presentations and academic presentations, and also like making sure that you're like, if people don't want to be programmed back to back, not doing back to back stuff, and people don't want to be on programming with other people, or they do want to be on programming with other people, or they're not qualified for one thing or they are for another. And so, like, one of the things that you can do if you want to be on programming is like try to make it as easy as possible for the programmers and not complain about it all that much, because frankly, you know, programmers are going to be you can keep running into the same people doing programming at repeat conventions. So I always think it pays to be polite and nice and grateful for what you get.
That's good to know. This is all volunteer work, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
These are all volunteers.
So, I mean,
it's really not easy. So, there are ways, like, put down as many things as possible that you can be on and that you're available to do if you want to get a lot of programming. And for God's sake, get it in early so people can organize around you. And also, be a good member when you're on panels. Like, don't be boring. Don't hijack the panel. You know, all of those things. Because if you think programmers aren't paying attention to what goes on, you know, or don't have spies out there in the ranks seeing how people act on panels, then, you know, you're making a grave mistake. So,
I mean, for instance,
that's my two cents.
one of the panels I moderated was on alien biology, and none of the panels were actual biologists, which was kind of a shame. Pat McEwen did some great stuff. She apparently she really thinks about this in her fiction, and so I kind of let her go. But Jack McDevitt was there. Now, Jack McDevitt, I mean, the guy's won more more nebulas than you can shake a stick at. But his thing was, and I knew this, and I was surprised to see him on the panel, was he doesn't really write science fiction with aliens that much. When he does, he hand waves it. When he can't hand wave it, he asks an expert. So he, to his credit, he kind of said that and then kind of sat back. You know, he didn't try and hijack the panel, which he easily could have. So I did appreciate that, but you know, I did also feel bad that he'd been put in that situation.
Sure.
But with Worldcon, you have the added complication that every Worldcon is run by a different team of fans. So just like I did academic track at this one, I'm going to do literary at the next one. I never have done any of this stuff for a Worldcon before. I might not ever again. I have no idea. When people talk about unevenness in Worldcons, yeah, that's just true. I mean, you know, for instance, if you got a BayCon, like in San Francisco, you know, that's going to be the same people every year. Whereas Worldcons, because they move around every year, it's different people every year. So that can lead to some confusion as well.
Well, I decided to try to, you know, to volunteer to be on programming, basically because I went to Worldcon and I went to a podcasting panel, and all the people on the panel said, "Well, wait a minute, why the hell aren't you up here?"
Yeah.
And so that's why I decided to start, you know, volunteering for that kind of stuff, and I think I do it the way Gail's talking about. I just mark as many things as I'm interested in as possible that I think that I could actually contribute to, you know, and not sound like a complete and utter Donardo. But
oh man, that's gonna be a thing now, isn't it? Oh, wonderful.
But yeah, I mean, that's and I still don't understand. You know, I don't remember marking that I was interested in Flame Wars or the Urban Fantasies Oh My thing. I still don't really know. Maybe I marked Urban Fantasy.
Well, that wasn't on the you know, do you like Flame Wars? I don't think it was on the questionnaire, right? They're taking a guess at that point. You know. At some point they have to throw it back to the people that they happen to pick and get the feedback that says, no, I'm not good for this, or yes, yeah, I'm okay with this. You know, at some point there has to be a dialogue between that. And it's a lot of work, it's a lot of coordination, and I my hat's off to them for you know, number one is deciding to take it upon themselves to do this in their free time for the community, mm-hmm. and two, you know, organizing a convention that's just logistically daunting, you know. I mean, it's a lot of work. So,
oh yeah, well, you know, and I've told this story. I think I told John this story. I don't know if I've like told this story, but on Monday, they basically said when we got our Hugo Awards that if we wanted to ship them, they would ship them for us. And so I went into this little room and I filled out a piece of paper, and they said, come in on Monday and we'll take care of that. So after, you know, I think all my panels were on Sunday and Monday. So after my panels on Monday, I went and got my Hugo Award. I went to the con office, which was in the River Center, in one of the meeting rooms there. And, you know, I walked in and there was one gentleman there, and I believe he was British. And he had that accent where he could have been possibly like Scottish as well. It was like in between. Anyway, he had all the boxes there and he said, yep, we're shipping them. And he found the box that had my paperwork, and he took the Hugo and he wrapped it twice in some bubble wrap and he set it down in this gigantic box and said, you know, we'll get it shipped out to you. And I looked at that and I'm going, I started out in shipping and receiving. That's not enough packing material. This is all the things that are going on in my head. And I said, are you going to put some more stuff in that box? And he kind of smiled. He says, I don't have anything else to put in the box right now. And I said, what do you mean you don't have? He said, I don't have any packing material. I don't have anything. And he points and there's this table and there's about six Hugos in boxes sitting there. He's like, I can't ship any of these because I don't have any packing material. All I have is this roll of bubble wrap and it's not enough. And another gentleman walked in at that moment, and the first gentleman looked at the second one and said, I don't have any packing material for the Hugos. What do I do? And the guy said, well, you need to call such and such and get a budget for it and just go buy some packing material. Go over to the UPS store. He said, really? I wouldn't even wait for the budget. Just go buy it. He's like, I don't have any money. I can't afford to. And the guy says, hold on. He like calls somebody, leaves them a voicemail and says, now you just have to wait for them. And that guy leaves. And I looked at the first guy and I said, look, if it's that much of a big deal, I will go over to the UPS store. I will buy all the packing material and I'll donate it to the con so that everybody's Hugos get home safe and sound. And he said, well, that's very kind of you. You don't have to do that, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, let me go over there. I go over there. They're closed. And I see a guy in there, and I'm pounding on the door, and he comes over, and I said, I need all your packing material. He says, I don't have any. We're sold out. Great. So I go back to the con office, and the guy's still there, and he said, well, thank you for trying. I said, well, what about the concierge? Let's find out what the concierge knows. He's like, I can't really leave. I'm supposed to stay here in the office. I'm the only one here today. And I said, I'll take care of it. So I go downstairs, I get to the concierge, and I'm like, I explain the whole thing to him. He gets a bellhop, and the bellhop leads me through the innards of the hotel to this room where they have the big carts with, you know, that they normally put all the luggage on, and on one of those carts is all this newspaper that's going to be recycled. He's like, you can have all this.
Yeah.
So nice. I took all that up to the con suite, or to the con office, and I gave it to him, and he was just so happy. And then we took some cardboard boxes. I said, just cut these up and use this. And he's like, yep, I'll take care of it. Don't you worry about it. And he thanked me and sent me on my way. But, you know.
And that is how Patrick saved Worldcon. A thrilling tale of shipping materials.
Well, and the kind of the point is, you know, he's a volunteer. And, you know, he just needed some help. And so I volunteered to help. And I think he was shocked that I was helping him. He kept looking at me and looking at my badge and looking at me and looking at my badge. Like, who the hell are you? But if your Hugo comes in the box from the con and it's full of all this newspaper and cardboard, yeah, I was partially responsible for that. So.
But no, right. I mean, that's what it comes down to is Worldcons are volunteer efforts, and sometimes they don't go smoothly, but as long as people keep volunteering to step up and help, then we can actually make it happen, which is, man, let me tell you, having been inside the sausage this time, I'm just amazed that it happens at all and that it happens so well.
And, you know, Gail mentioned that she felt like attendance was up. I have no idea. I was going to look at that.
Oh, by the way, I don't know if these numbers are official yet, so take them as provisionally as you want to. But the last warm body count that I saw on the staff mailing list was 4,300 people.
That's not bad.
Okay, so it's not up though.
No, that's below last year.
4,302 if you count cold bodies.
What I was going to say is I did notice like Thursday. It felt more like World Fantasy, which caps at, what, 2,000?
1,000, usually.
I thought it was 2 for some reason. Anyway, it felt there wasn't, like, a whole lot of foot traffic. And then Friday and Saturday, it just exploded. And I felt like that you couldn't turn around without smacking somebody.
I felt like Thursday was really extraordinarily crowded for a Thursday. Like, usually nothing's happening. I was there early because I like it when nothing's happening. And I had a bunch of panels because I was one of the only people, I'm assuming, who was there on the Thursday. And I suspect maybe you didn't run into people, Patrick, because they were all at the panels. Because I was like, what's going on? It did not feel like a Thursday to me. So
interesting.
Solid perception, I guess.
Now, I bought a bunch of t-shirts. I do that because especially now with the new job, they let you wear t-shirts, so I'm trying to out nerd everybody else. And I was at one of the t-shirt vendors in the dealer room, and he actually did say to me, this goes back to John and Chris's letter and attendance and everything else. He said to me, if Worldcon attendance doesn't grow, he's going to stop coming because it's not worth his while financially anymore. I found that interesting.
So when was it worth his while?
This was one of the t-shirt vendors.
The t-shirt vendor, okay.
Yeah. Basically, he said when you go to a Comic Con, you go to these other conventions that he goes to. He's like, yeah, there's just so many people, and you know, it pays for the trip, and they have a profit.
And he said when he comes to Worldcon, you know, he's struggling to make a profit. And I noted that there were some absent publishers and absent booksellers in the dealer room that I've seen in previous years. They weren't there this year. And me being me, you know, I can send emails to folks. And I did have someone tell me anonymously that basically they don't make any money at Worldcon. They don't even break even anymore, so that's why they didn't have a table this year. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, but somebody made the comment too. I saw people talking about that a lot, and somebody made an interesting comment, which I'm totally going to misquote or forget. But you know, Worldcon is not an exhibition con. It's not meant for publishers. In other words, it's not something that they would that's meant for them to hawk their wares. Right. It's geared more towards fans, and a fan kind of gathering is what I'm saying this wrong, so forgive me, but you know, it kind of put a perspective on it. It was like, oh, so you know, publishers may not expect to go there and make a whole lot of money, and maybe they didn't, you know, maybe they, that's why they didn't go, or plus attendance is down. If it's down, then you know, they know the numbers better than I do, for sure. But you know,
we can't profit off of everything.
No, well, it just had something to do with the focus of the con not being geared towards publishers.
Well, and certainly they don't drive traffic to the dealer's room the way a Comic-Con would.
But sure. There's also the factor that, I mean, some people who are regular Worldcon attendees, like me, for example, are really jaded about the dealer's room. It's the same stuff that it is every year. So I like tour the dealer's room and walk through and say hi to familiar faces. But what I'm looking for is somebody different or unique or local to the area. So like the t-shirt guy who's there hawking the same t-shirts he's been hawking for the last decade is not going to interest me. But then again, I mean, I also don't wear t-shirts. But so, I mean, that's part of the factor is that, you know, I'm sorry his sales are down, but variety is the spice of life.
Well, and I know I for one, my usual goal in the dealer's room is the locust table. Usually that is the beginning and the end of my experience with the dealer's room. But, you know, I always try and take a look at the books. And honestly, I try and take a look at the jewelry. I don't wear much jewelry, but, you know, I figure if there's any place I'm going to find something that matches my taste, it's going to be here. My very favorite jewelry vendor in the entire world, who almost always does World Fantasies if they're in the States and usually does World Cons if she can, it's Young Unicorn. She was there. And so I was like, yay, I'll pick up a new piece. And then I was like, oh, wait, I've actually already got all the stuff from her that I like. Nothing else that she does or has done recently fits my style. So I was like, oh, I can't give her money this year. That's sad.
It's kind of funny that you say that, Karen, because Matt said the exact same thing.
Well, you can't see my piercings anyway.
No. So, you know what my takeaway from Worldcon is? It's a great time. It's wonderful to meet all these great people that I get to talk to online and on the podcast and through the blog, and it's a blast.
Oh yeah, and getting to, for me, once I was finally done with the paneling and once I was finally done with all the organizing, I finally got a chance to just hang out with people I like. And I was like, oh, thank goodness, right. This is why I keep coming to Worldcons. And it almost wasn't until Sunday night that I finally felt that, because I had been so busy. But Sunday night after the Hugo Award ceremony, Gary Wolf was going to let me come to the loser's party as his plus one. But Gary ran off to have a smoke after the awards, and I was hanging out with Kid Johnson. The line for the elevator, I know you winners didn't have to deal with this, but right after the ceremony, the line for the elevators was packed and it was not moving. So finally, Kidge and a few other people, and then we gathered Gary, and they're just like, that's it, we're off to the other hotel and we're going to hang out at the bar. This was the other bar from where Gail was. So, but that meant I got to spend my my Hugo after party in the bar with Kidge Johnson and Kim Stanley Robinson and John Kessel and Beth Meacham and Bob Silverberg and Connie Willis. And, you know, I was like, I didn't make it all the way to the actual loser's party, but yeah, I feel like I'm doing okay.
Well, I will say this. It was great having breakfast with your son and your husband, Karen.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for putting up with my son. He was not on his best behavior that breakfast.
No, as you can say, you were only there for 3 minutes, so.
My food was only in front of me for 3 minutes. I was there quite a bit longer. But no, Gavin was amazing. I was stunned. He was so good through the whole thing. And, you know, and he even let Curtis go to some panels. He actually was able to sit through some panels. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe Curtis even tried, frankly, but it worked out.
So I do want to throw out there that we had a little breakfast, and we had a bunch of SF Signal people there. And this year, I wasn't the one to annoy the wait staff.
Well, who did?
Everybody who came after.
Yeah, pretty much.
Some late arrivals. They did not take kindly to late arrivals.
She walked up and she would look at you. She goes, "Ah, there's another one."
Yeah, sure.
Well, now I have to get another play setting. No, that totally didn't happen, but it was close to it.
Okay, so we've been talking forever. Let's go ahead and do some final thoughts about Worldcon and anything else that you wanted to mention. Let's start with Matt because you've been so quiet for so long.
I forgot to mention how awesome it was having breakfast across from Stina Light. That was cool.
Stina's awesome.
Yes, and there was an unusual amount of heterosexual man love at this con. I never been to one, but maybe that's normal. Lots of hugging and lap sitting and, you know, things put in other people's ears. And, it was like a sexual reawakening.
Man, where was I?
The funny thing is, so. I know exactly what he's talking about at each exact moment. I know what he's talking about.
And I don't.
I meant all the good things.
Sorry.
What was that, Gail?
I said I miss all the good bits.
You have to hang out with us.
I know.
I will say that I was surprised that a certain managerial editor did sit in my lap. That was surprising. Yes.
And this wasn't just a Santa sit. This was a cuddle sit.
I can't believe you thought through enough to have different terms for that.
I have a list.
All right, Matt, finish your thought.
That's it. That's all my thought.
Okay. Gail, how about you?
Well, I mean, I really enjoyed the drinks with writers thing as well. I thought that was really fun. I hope that kind of spontaneous, well, I guess it was planned, but writers collecting together at a bar outside of the convention so kind of other people can come and say hi. I thought that was pretty cool spin-off. And I actually had a really fun evening spreading some terrible rumors about people. At my editor's orders, I would like to say, but I'm not going to tell anybody here on the podcast because I can't go on the record spreading these rumors. So you'll just have to run into me at another Worldcon and I will spread more rumors.
For the record, Gail's editor wants people to know that she's evil.
Yes. Oh, yes. Some of the rumors were purely purely about how evil she is. Yes. Hence the orders I was under.
So after the Hugos, we had to stand in this room and have our photos taken forever. And Mer came in without her Campbell Award, but she had the tiara. Anyway, and then John Scalzia tried to murder her with his Hugo, which was just horrible. He smacked her in the head with it, which was funny. It was totally an accident, but didn't leave a mark, and she's still telling the story now. But anyway, when we met in the losers party, I said something about I was going to go downstairs because Kevin Eikenberry, a friend of mine from Colorado Springs, was there, and he was tweeting with David Boop and a bunch of other folks from Colorado how they were setting up an SF Signal celebration party in the bar, and that we had to come down. So I'm like, I got to go down there, and Mer said, well, if you see Davey, tell her to keep the champagne flowing. And I said, okay, because I've met her a couple times as well, and we've chatted. And so I went down to the bar, and I saw her, and I said, oh, I've got a message from Mer. And she said, okay. And I said, it was either keep the champagne flowing or publish my book. I'm not sure which one. And she just looked at me like, I'm going to keep the champagne flowing.
I figured it was worth a shot. Okay, so Gail, any other thoughts?
No, that was pretty much it. I had a great time. I'm super excited about London next year. I'm really looking forward to it. So hopefully we'll see you guys there and more of the listeners as well.
It'd be awesome. How about you, Karen? Yeah. Final thoughts?
I mean, like I say, I actually ended up, despite everything, having Great World Con. There were times when I was in the middle of it before it was happening that I was afraid it was going to be some kind of, you know, horrible, awful, catastrophic thing. And you know, honestly, I had a good time. It seems like most people had a really good time. Yeah, really looking forward to London. Although, if I've never worked this hard at a con before, I'm probably going to end up working 3 times as hard in London. So we'll see how that goes. And Gavin will be 3 instead of 2, which I hear is harder to handle. So, yeah. But no, I had a great time. And oh, that was the other thing I wanted to say. There were so many people that I saw, but so many people I missed.
Yeah.
I never managed to cross paths with Justin Shuren or Jared Sheridan or Justin Landon, or there were a bunch of people there that I was like, how was I there for 6 days and I never saw you? So apologies to everyone that I accidentally didn't run into, as well as thanks to all the people I did.
John.
Similar to Karen, I just had a great time from start to finish. I wasn't there long, wanted to be there longer. The people I did see, I didn't see for long enough. There were a lot of people I missed entirely. Winning the Hugo Award again was fantastic. I just, you know, memory of a lifetime. Thanks to everyone for making my Worldcon so memorable.
You're welcome.
Yay.
On behalf of Matt Smith, on behalf of everybody, you're welcome.
So just people that made it wonderful for you.
There were actually, it's funny. So after we, you know, we talked a little bit about the SF Signal meetup on Saturday morning, and I, you know, Patrick put me on the spot to mention some names, and I knew I was going to forget some. So after, you know, we finished talking about it, I went to go look at some pictures so I can remember. And we forgot to mention and thank Adam Christopher, John Klima, John Wiswell, and Matthew Bay, who were also at the meetup and were a lot of fun and fun to talk to and see again. So that was all good stuff.
Very cool. So what I want to say is, John, that's all great stuff. I also want to thank Janet Harriet, who is my con buddy now, and we were hanging out quite a bit. She's with Apex Books. We had tons of fun. We also had lunch together. And, you know, John Klima was awesome. David Boop was awesome. Josh Vogt. Matt, you cracked me up, dude, constantly. So all right. I really want to thank you. Jeff Patterson was awesome. Didn't hardly get to see Jeff, and that was kind of a bummer. I know that he did not have the best time selling his art, but that he had a lot of fun in the art room itself. So there was that. It was great to meet his wife. It was great to meet Kevin. Oh my gosh. Whose wife were there? Larry's wife was there. Wasn't Derek's wife there too? No.
Yes.
Derek, yeah. Yeah. I saw Derek's her at one wife, point.
Derek, Jeff, and Larry.
It was nice to see Curtis again, Karen. It was great to see your family, John. It was great to see Kate Baker. And I mean, there's just a billion people. Keffi was awesome. The friend that we're not naming because we don't know if she wants us to name Matt. She was awesome.
Yes.
It was just, like I said, I don't drink. And I don't drink. It's not like a moral thing. It's not like, oh, you shouldn't drink thing. It's a, you know, there's too many people in my family who drink to excess and I don't want to be like them kind of thing. So that's why I don't drink. But I don't have a problem being in the bar. However, that bar was loud.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was loud. So that's why I was sitting in the lobby. And that ended up working great because, like I said, you know, I was between them and the bathroom. So they kept coming out to talk to me. Come on now, that was funny.
Hi-o.
All right, and as John said, I also want to thank folks for the Hugo win. That is awesome. I did get the Hugo in the mail here, actually in the shipping here not too long ago. And Shadow the Cat has already taken a look at it, sniffed it, and walked away. So he made sure that I understood that it means absolutely nothing to him whatsoever.
At least like he didn't urinate on it.
No, he didn't.
Sorry, I stepped on your line.
But it was funny that a Facebook friend who has no idea about any of this stuff asked me if that was a bong.
It could be.
And I had to say no. And to be honest with you, I mean, there are some worse things that people have said. So that was like the least of the worst things that people have said.
Well, just look at the thing.
Yep. Now, I scheduled myself like crazy recording interviews at Worldcon. And once all of those interviews were done, I found a great place to record them.
Oh, I feel your pain on that.
So there was a point where John DiNardo walked up and said, "This is where you record it. What about all this ambient noise?" And I'm just like, "Shut up. Walk away. It'll work itself out. It'll be fine."
So there you go, Karen. For next year, have a place for podcasters to...
Well, there was one. They had an interview room, and I couldn't get anybody to let me use it. They weren't replying to my emails, so I didn't use it this year. I used it last year.
I'm on the ballot. What does a guy have to do to get a reservation around here?
But Brent Bowen used it. I was like, damn it. How did Brent get to use it? Anyway.
I didn't even know about that. I might have tried to take advantage of that if it were there. Although, no, wait. I'm glad. Actually, I remember thinking to myself, I'm glad I'm not scheduling any podcast interviews this time because Curtis is already about to kill me for the complete discrepancy in who had childcare duties.
Uh-oh.
Over this con. By the way, one thing I forgot to mention, this Worldcon has daycare, and that was a lifesaver. I don't think very many people took advantage of it, but those of us who did were supremely grateful.
And, of course, by daycare, she means you just drop them off with Chris Garcia.
No. I get them back little beards.
Not little beards.
Good boy.
All right. So I want to thank everybody for coming on tonight. This was a lot of fun. I'm so glad that we were able to see each other again and to see all the other wonderful folks. And anybody that we forgot to name, please don't blame myself, Karen, or Matt.
Hey. I think that leaves me. I take full responsibility. No, I'm terrified of leaving people, you know, omitting people, right?
John, just as a final thought, once again, someone did come up to me and say, "Wow, you and John, you introduce everybody to everybody. That's so cool."
Yeah, I did appreciate that. Thank you, guys.
No problem. And on that note, I think we will end this. Anything else anybody wants to say, John, Karen, or Matt?
BewareTheHairyMango.com.
Karen?
Nope, I'm good.
John?
I am good.
And Gail, no, wait,
see y'all in London 2014.
There you Woo-hoo. Go. Gail had to leave, so please check out GailCarriger.com and check out Gail online. Check out SFSignal.com. But more importantly, check out ATFMB. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the SF Signal podcast. Our podcast is available for download every week at SFSignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the link to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com, and you can also search SF Signal in iTunes to find the feed. To comment about this or any of our podcast episodes, please call our voicemail line at 720-277-9082. If you enjoyed this podcast, help us boost the signal by telling your friends. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal Irregulars offer up new content every day. From weekly mind melts featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SFNF field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, new author spotlights, movie reviews, videos, science fiction, fantasy, and horror tidbits, free fiction roundups, and the new genre-related crowdfunding roundups. Click the RSS button in the sidebar to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Wah, wah. And scene.